selling.
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Time out. Greg Pappas with us. Matt Byrne on the board. As they say, they used to say on the trading floor, Greg, whack, 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 whack.
Brutal morning.
Brutal morning. After two brutal days. Where did that total fake out rally come from last Wednesday? Who the hell was buying last Wednesday? It was a big update.
You know, BTFD is the name of the game, but that has not worked well past week and a half.
No. So today, get ready for these numbers. Be sitting. S&P is down 155. Not 55, not 5, 155. That's almost 3%. NASDAQ down 807. That's 4.4%. The big stocks, the ones that are going to keep you in riches for the rest of your life, not so much today. Apple down 15. That's 6.8%. Tesla down 16, 7.8%. Microsoft down 15, 3.8%. Meta hit the big week last week, down 25, 5%. Google down 7.5, that's 4.6. But the big mover is Nvidia down 10, 9.7%.
You said Tesla, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Tesla's down 16, 7.8. And if Bitcoin was going to be your savior, it's down $7,600. It's 13%, 51,618.
And Ethereum even worse.
It's down 17%.
Minus 25 or...
I got it 17.
Or that's 472. That's the Grayscale is down even more. The ETF for Ethereum is down like 25%.
Well, there's a progression to this. Take the tulips, for instance.
Hold on. Before you get there. And we're still up for the year.
Yeah, but we're losing one more day like this, and that's a...
We're still up. We got two more days like this in the tank. Just to be down for the year.
I only wish that we only lost as much on the way down as we made on the way up. But it doesn't work that way. Because people borrow money to buy when it's higher, and then on the way down they have margin issues. Now, at some point here this morning, when everybody gets a little more awake, I'm going to work through a mechanism on how this actually affects the supply of money. Are you ready for that? We'll do that later.
I'm still amazed at how the currencies are moving like equities.
Well, let's talk about that as well, because that's very current.
Yeah, when you see the dollar and the yen and call it Australian or Canadian moving as much as equities do, you know, those are supposed to move about a third as much based on the volatility levels, you know, maybe less. And all of a sudden, when those start moving 2% a day, now that's the biggest market there is, and you look at the butterfly effects and the effects of just that are enormous. So,
all right, you forced me now. When you look at stuff like what Greg is talking about, the Japanese yen is down. The yen is at 142.71 to the dollar. I'm going to say, you're better at the history on this stuff. A month ago was 161?
Yeah. Yeah, the yen and the issues that they've had and the debate that they've had there with their central bank and interest rates especially, you'll see over the past, 2 weeks? I think that just in the last month where you've gone from 175... And there was a huge rally, and now we've taken out almost a year's worth of gains in less than a month. That's how fast stuff moves.
Well, if you're a trader,
and there's still a if you look at the euro at least, or even the dollar.
Well,
against
the euro is actually strengthening against the dollar.
Well, it's I'm talking about against the yen now.
Everybody's
big trade is
But the British pound is 127.6. It's down a little bit from Friday. The euro is actually up a little bit from Friday versus the dollar. Now, this is what Greg's trying to say, and please...
I'm saying you take 10 months on the way up, and all of a sudden it's gone in one or two.
Before you said something, I was going to say, everybody, now listen to what Greg's saying, because it's not just, let's not be Chicago, Midwest, you know, focused. We're like the horse with the blinders on. It's not just us. Greg's talking about is what about euro versus yen? What about...
Yeah, that moved 2.5% today. And that's supposed to move based on, you know, the volatility and the expected moves, you know, maybe a half or 0.75% a day, maybe. And all of a sudden you get, call it a 2.5% move. You know, those are for the biggest market there is. I mean, the cash and currency markets make the equities.
Do me a favor, will I explain the delta of this? And I don't want to go too deep. Kick me if I go too deep. But check and see what the Swiss franc is. I think the Swiss franc's to the moon today.
The Swiss franc, I mean, it's supposed to be even less volatile. So if you look at the dollar versus the...
Well, it's not. That's... Greg, that's the point you and I try to make every Monday and every other day you're on it. It's not all about... This is not you personally or me. This is not all about you. It's about relationships from one to the other. The Swiss franc is probably not volatile. The dollar's volatile versus the Swiss franc. Right? Am I right?
Yeah. So when you see that moving, you say, wait a second.
But it's not moving. The other stuff is. Right. The Swiss franc's probably the one that's steady.
Yeah. So the dollar versus the franc is, call it 1%. But if you look at the pound versus the franc, you know, you get a multiple. You have 1.25 what else is good against the franc? The Canadian against the franc is
well,
also...
You know, the U.S. dollar versus Canadian is steady.
I haven't looked at that one yet. Let me look at that.
What's CHF?
That's the pound.
No, it's not. The pound is GBP.
Or that's the franc, yeah. Swiss franc.
All right, so we're...
The dollar versus the Canadian hasn't moved too much.
We're down a whole percent against the Swiss franc.
Yeah. Right, and so then if you look at versus the yen, we got 2.5 or 3.
As a trader, I'm going to go through this real quick because it's fairly technical and fairly complicated, which we can do. You know, if you want us to lap, if you want me and Greg to lapse back into theory here, we can.
Or if you need a good bedtime.
Yeah, if you need one, you know, if you want to roll back over. If you are trade, you're Greeks, not Greeks like Greg. You're Greeks that, you know, the deltas and those kinds of things, the gammas and stuff on your option models. One of the things that's very key if you are a trader of these things is if you're trading, say for instance, I'll use IBM. IBM's down 492, by the way. Say IBM is at 185. Okay, you're the 185 call or put, they're not like futures were exactly the same because there's interest involved, but I won't go into that. Basically, your delta is 50. Right, it's probably going to be 52 on the call, 48 on the put, and the security
there
side.
There it is, 3% in the pound versus the yen, 3%.
Okay, so what that means is that for every next move in the IBM, up or down, the option, the at-the-money option, is going to move essentially 50%. Okay, well, that's one piece of the puzzle. But now, if IBM moves to 186, say, now, the next dollar move in IBM, now the first dollar move you expect to be 50 cents in the option. The next dollar move in IBM is probably going to be 55 cents or 56 cents in the option, maybe 58, because IBM has a volatility of, say, 20, an implied volatility. So the curvature and the change of the delta is...
Okay, you're going to lose them.
But I'm saying the curvature and the delta is not very great. But now if it's a utility... It never moves. And they say the utility's trading 30. And all of a sudden something happens. They find gold and it's 31 or goes from 31 to 32. That options delta might have gone from 50 to 100 just in a dollar.
Yeah. And the easy way of talking about what you're saying is if you imagine the options as insurance contracts for the people who actually need the insurance, the traders are repricing the cost of the insurance in it fast and up. So imagine, I don't know, if you're in Florida right now and you've got a hurricane, you know, 30 miles west or whatever off the coast, that's like like what's going on right now. We've got winds that are five times higher than they normally are. And now if you're asking for insurance during the winds, what's happening is they're repricing those to, okay, so for the next year or however long you sign the insurance, we're going to price in 50 to 70 mile an hour winds every single day. Because right now, that's what the winds are. You know, if we're going to move 2%, the volatility is way higher. So,
also, when you're talking about
trying to buy insurance or you're trying to put on your hedges in this kind of environment, it's going to be an issue because everything's way more expensive now. So if you don't have it in place, if you don't have it in place already, you're going to be paying through the nose for that insurance.
Plus, do you really want it?
And still, it might be, you know, considering these moves are large, but you know, it's not unheard of. So if you need insurance and you still have to buy it, you know, by all means, please hedge your products. But like, but yeah, it's like trying to get your home insurance and or hurricane insurance during the storm. It's not a great idea.
Well, the VIX is, but I mean, let me finish this real quick. So if you're trading some hapless lad or happy lad trading the Japanese yen this morning, we're talking four strikes. There's no way on earth that anybody expected the third strike out to be 100 delta right now. So if you were short any kind of puts,
looks like naked, you might be getting delivered.
It looks like you might be carried out.
Or getting carried out, yeah. I mean,
feet first.
The good news is the system here is so robust and transparent, and the margins are so, I mean, even if those people get carried out, the system in place is such that we're, everything is very...
Wait a minute, I've been there in 87, I've been there in 90 or 2001. I'm not so sure it's all that robust. We'll see.
For the customers,
yeah.
I mean, you get carried out, but in terms of the system and the confidence and the stability,
when you have four and five and six firms left doing all the option market making,
they could goof up.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to lose two of them. I hope maybe never. And I don't know how much robust the remaining four are going to be on that day.
Well, that would, Mr. Happy over there.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, man, whatever, true. He's right.
If you can imagine it, it can happen.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, these guys are huge for a reason, and you and I are not just, you know, whistling in the wind here. I could have said something worse. We happen to know people that are in risk for a lot of these companies, and they've been struggling to maintain their risk profile the last few weeks as the market's come a little unglued. The glee with which you sell, for instance, is NVIDIA's 96.77. And it was, you know, 120. The glee with which you sell the 105 puts or the 100 puts naked, you're not so gleeful this morning.
No,
they sure
you're not
seem
gleeful.
Like they sure seemed like money in the bank 3 days ago, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. But on the on the flip side, you know, if you have cash and you're putting it to work now, it's considerably more. I mean, 4% in the Qs. That's more than half a year or that's almost a full year worth of
Well, if you are,
if you're looking at it like long term, or if you're looking at it full in yearly perspective, you know, you get a whole move in one day for a year. That's pretty good.
I'm going to get calls today from people, and they're going to say, "What do you think?" Now, two things can happen. One is, let's take a look at NVIDIA, because that's everybody's favorite stock. It's down roughly $11. It's 96.40. The volatility, the implied volatility, is going to go to the moon. So your call and put prices are going to be exceptionally high. So in terms of...
And they should be at the moon.
Well, sure. So if somebody were to want to buy NVIDIA today, okay, they're getting it $11 cheaper than they would have on Friday. Duh.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, that part's good. Now, if you want to do a covered right, you probably can get a price for the 100 calls that you never dreamed you were going to get. So if you subtract the call price from the, I don't know where it's going to be, where it's going to open, but the calls. But I'm going to say, let's say you get $7 for those calls or $5, or if you went out far enough, you might get 12. So now
incredible.
Your break even is really 84.
And that's so, what you got to think about when you're putting in those cash orders to buy the stock.
But now the question is,
can you get 84?
Are you comfortable with the 84? I mean, 2 weeks ago when it was 120, the answer to that would be yes. Now today, are you or aren't you? Now you're going to get...
That's what Soros would call reflexivity.
Well,
where you get those moves and they compound on themselves. So if there's fear at what are we, 100 or 90,
97, then there's 96.
Yeah, so then there's even more fear at 84, and then it multiplies on itself.
Now you should be, if you were all gung ho this stock a week ago, if you listen to Cramer all day long,
should be buying 10% more.
You should be immediately buying and maybe selling some calls. And if it goes, if you sell the calls for $7, say, and it goes to 110, you'd be pissed off you sold the calls. When in fact you shouldn't be, because you just made, you know, just made
you
nine
just made
now,
in a month, yeah.
You just made $9 or $10 in a week and a half. But people will be bitching. That's just the way, you know, people are these days, because on the upside you deserve all of it. But now the question is, I mean, the weird part, Greg, is when I tell these wacky stories, and I know to you I look like this old grumpy dude, but I had a seminar here one day. We did. And I was talking, I usually lead off the seminar, and there's probably, the office used to be bigger when people wanted to come to seminars, and we probably had 35 people here. And I said, you know, the problem you have with, one guy asked me about stop orders, and, I'm going to buy a stock at 50, and if it goes to 60...
I hope it wasn't a market stop.
No. Well, I mean, that's what...
This morning, that'll look a little weird.
It'll look pretty bad. Actually, boy, you know, I should know this. Do stop orders work overnight? I don't think they do.
I don't think they do, unless you specifically tell them to trigger in overnight hours.
Yeah. Anyway, so one of the stocks I always was looking at, this is a long time ago, was GE. So GE was always traded 33, 34, 35. And I really liked the stock. Again, this was long before they sold the crap out of the place. And I always thought if I ever could get it below 30, I would call up a bunch of clients, we have limited power of attorney, or I do for a lot of my people. If I change stocks like that, I always call. I don't just say, screw it, I'm going to buy, you know, Joe's in GM, and he's going to wake up tomorrow and find out he's GE. I don't do that to people. Now the stock gets clobbered this last week before the seminar. It's down to like 26 or 27. And I'm trying to figure out why. Because all of a sudden, if they never went below 30, and I heard it's like 25, 26, somewhere down there. So I go, hey, guys, you know, and ladies, you know, whenever GE went under 30, I always wanted to buy it. And everybody goes, yeah, we really like GE, too. And there was a big discussion in the room. And I said, okay, it's trading 26. I said, I'm going to say two-thirds of you people are already PTI clients. How about if I pass around some buy tickets? You get to see what a buy ticket looks like. Just fill in your name, your account number, and how many shares you want to buy. And all of a sudden, the guy goes, oh, wait a minute. And I said, what do you mean, wait a minute? He said, anywhere under 30, you'd like it. It's 25. He goes, yeah, but there seems to be like some news out there that I didn't know was there.
Yeah.
And I'm going, duh. That's the reason why you got to be real careful with these. I'll buy this stock here at any time because things tend to change. I said, you know what? I don't want it here. I'm hoping none of you guys fill these out. The thing was on its way to like 5 or 6. I mean, it took a while, but I said, you know, something has fundamentally changed here. So you can't just have this, gee, if XYZ ever trades under 10, I'm a huge buyer. Okay, what if an asteroid hit New York the day before? Do you still want to buy? I mean, a lot of things change, right, Greg? I mean, so you got to be careful. I mean, as they say, the ever-changing marketplace. S&P futures down 162, yeah. That's over 3% now. NASDAQ futures down 829, make that 833. That's 4.5%. This is a major ouchie here this morning. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years, I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
God damn it.
Blowing up big Stocks and Jacks. Time out. Matt Byrne on the board. Greg Pappas in the studio. We should have Jen Flanning on the line. Jen, it's all about the market when you get back. S&P futures down 171. It's getting worse by the second here, Greg. Down 3.2%. NASDAQ futures down 850, 450. So, Jen, pontificate on this while I'm doing the stuff that Greg says. If the lady's 10 years older than how much money she has, he won't marry her.
What are you talking about?
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much money.
I think that was how that conversation went. But
was
okay.
That was my takeaway. Amanda hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. Dow futures down 7.7. Why are we being jolly here? When the market's getting cremated here, it's almost stupid. The Dow's hanging in there because even with this mess, Amgen's up 7.50 and United Healthcare is up 2.77. So even if the world goes to zero, evidently your hospital bill is still going to be the same. I guess that's the message. Over in Europe,
how about your stirrings, Tom?
Yeah. Anyway, so hang on to these numbers. Will you hang on to your coffee? DAX down 450, 2.6%. FTSE down 191, 2.3%, as they have riots all over the damn place. So that's not good. CAC around down 144, 2%, even though they're winning a lot of medals at the Olympic Games, which have been kind of fun to watch. Asia, again, now this is, make sure you're lying down. Nikkei down 4,400, 12.4%. I don't think in my entire lifetime in this business I've ever seen anything like that. The Hang Seng down 247, 1.5. Shanghai down 44, 1.5. 12.4% in the Nikkei. That is incredible. On Friday was bad enough. The Dow was down 610, S&P's down 100, NASDAQ down 417. We're blowing that apart here this morning. Bonds down 7 basis points, 3.72 on the 10-year. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.11. Japan down 18 basis points, 0.77. They were 103 a couple weeks ago. These numbers are something like I never would have dreamed. As much as I think anything bad can happen. This is about as bad as it gets. Oil down 1.19, 72.33. Brent down 108, 75.73. There's nothing up here. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3 bucks. Down 3%, I'm sorry, to 190. I don't know, Greg. I never thought I'd see it under 2 again this year, but there it is. RBOB down 4 cents, 227. Gold. These guys were up last night. Now, not anymore. They're down 33 bucks, 24.36. Still hanging above 2400, but that's 1.3%. Silver down a buck 27. 27.12, that's a lot. Copper down 14 cents, 396. I guess your baseball cards are down here this morning, too. Everything must be. But here's what Greg has been nice enough to point out to us here. The euro against the dollar. The euro's actually up a hair at 109.5. But get this. Japan down 394. It's 2.7%, 142.60. Those guys are 162, I'm going to say, 4 to 6 weeks ago, Greg? Somewhere in there. The British pound, unchanged at 127.5, but that's actually down a little bit because they got riots all over there. The only one that's hanging in there is the Swiss franc, and that's like unchanged, but it's not unchanged against the other guys, against the Japanese yen and stuff. And this is another one, a shocker, if you're a Bitcoin person, down $8,200, 51,000, that's 13.9% on the Bitcoin. So if you're long anything today, it's a rough day. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sport, Cubs won.
Yeah, for once, yeah. Hey, good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:37 a.m. on August 5th, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, it's 77 degrees this morning, humid with some sunshine today. Thunderstorms are expected in some spots. Expect a high of 84 degrees today. Tonight, partly cloudy with thunderstorms expected after midnight. Down in Phoenix, 91 degrees right now, hot and sunny. Heat will be dangerous with a high of 113 degrees. Watch out for that. The MLB yesterday, of course, White Sox lost again to Twin City, 7-13. By the way, I want to point out, haven't been in 2 weeks, did not need to change my my script too much. White Sox lost 2 weeks ago, they're still losing now.
It's 20 in a row.
20 in a row.
Yeah, yikes, yes. Cubs, though, win St. Louis Cardinals 6-2. But now the very exciting part, Paris Olympics. USA leads in total medals with 72 accumulative and 19 total gold medals. In second place, we have China with 49 and France in third with 44. Yesterday, USA won gold in men's golf, men's 100 meter, women's cycling, men and women swimming for 100 meter medley, silver and bronze in shooting, swimming, gymnastics, archery, and 100 meter. 10 total medals were won for the USA. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Jan, how are you?
I'm good, Tom.
How's your portfolio looking?
Matt, what portfolio?
Well, there you go. Let's talk about some good news, at least for 5 or 10 minutes. Some of the Olympic stuff, the 100-meter dash, did you see that, the final? Well, they had all the heats, right? And this guy from Jamaica was the man, he was the Mr. Favorite, right? And this U.S. guy was pretty close, and all of a sudden they run, and the final was what, two or three thousandths of a second difference. You had to check the tape to see who won, but I did learn, you mavens, you sports mavens, what part of your body has to hit the tape?
Is your nose?
Chest.
We got an ant, Matt.
Nah,
it's below the. What's your collarbone? What's the name of the collarbone?
Clavicle.
Yeah, it's the clavicle,
really?
Or down.
Really.
So you can lean forward with your beak, and you got a big schnoz. It doesn't help because the dude who was supposed to win from Jamaica, his head broke the plane, but the other guy's chest got there first. Our guy.
Wow.
And anyway, it was really something.
It was great.
And. But then we had the this is the first year, and this is that policy where you got the relays where the men and the women are running the relays together and swimming the relays.
I think that was a good idea.
Is it new? Is it new in Tokyo? Nobody watched it because nobody was there, right? But is this the first time or the second time?
No say.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure. Well, two of them I watched, and they got the ladies running the anchored leg, right, or swimming. Well, tales of two, and the running, I don't know if it was the 4x400 or 4x100, we got this young lady running the anchor leg, and the two guys and the first lady get her like a, it had to be, you know, it's on TV, they're moving so fast. I'm going to say
that was the one where the U.S. lost it, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the other one went into beast mode.
Yeah, the other.
What's her name?
Well, the
Bull.
Well, she ends up, she had a 15 or 20 yard lead, our girl.
Yeah.
And she's pounding away, doing the best she can, and she's not even thinking anybody around. This lady from Holland, this tall blonde girl, all of a sudden she had to be 15 yards behind with 60 to go, and she blows by her.
Yeah, that was the mixed 400.
Yeah. God, I'm sitting there going,
is it medley? What is it?
Relay, yeah. And where did she come from? God. Well, and then the swimming part, the women are last.
It was introduced in Tokyo.
Okay, the women are last. And for some reason, the freestyle is always last in the swimming. So our two guys and the other girl break up, get her a big lead. Well, you know, in swimming, what's a big lead? You know, length or something. And the girl she's going against is like one of the best freestylers in the world. So they're going, she's got to hang in there. This young lady, I don't know where she dug somewhere deep in her bones. She made it to the end. She outlasted this other girl by maybe, couldn't have been 200ths of a second.
That was the one where it was U.S., China, Australia.
Yeah, but she was, talk about spent. There wasn't an extra energy calorie left in her body when she hit the thing. I was so proud of her. She was terrific.
It was a world record, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's only done twice, but then, not that we're a bunch of lecherous dudes, John. But how would you like to be the agents for the ladies who did 1-2 in the high jump? That Ukrainian girl, for God's sake, she looks like Ingrid Bergman. She's gorgeous, and so is the other one. They are whatever field they want to be in.
Got some contracts coming.
Yeah, they got some contracts coming from something. But God, how those girls are jumping what? 6'5"? That's unreal.
It's like 2 meters, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you could do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I could do none of that. Did you see the part where they're showing the guys who did the pommel horse? You see the Irish guy? God's sake, he was so fast and everything on the thing. Our guy was really good, and he got a bronze. You know how they start teaching the kids? You see that? You go in a gym, and the pommel horse, it's not a pommel horse. It's like, it looks like a big round thing. It's kind of capped in the middle. It looks like the end of a bullet, a real snub-nosed bullet. And the kids put their legs in like a 5-gallon Home Depot bucket. It's attached to a rope, so the legs are out there, so they can act like they're doing the pommel horse. You know, your legs stretched out long before you have the abdominal muscles. I'm not sure I ever would have the abdominal muscles to do that. But did you ever get on a pommel horse and stick your legs straight out?
I don't think you're really the build for
no.
for gymnast.
I'm not so sure what I'm the build of for, but so John, what the only thing I could think I could do? Did you see? We got to give Monty no one to grief when we see him. Do you see the German shooter guy that didn't even? He
was Turkish. Who didn't use any of the eye stuff?
Yeah, replay. Yeah, I saw the clips.
Well, but didn't the Chinese win the air pistol?
The joke on the internet is that guy's a hitman, and they called him back. Yeah,
if he isn't, he probably got two contracts today.
Yeah,
I mean, he didn't even. If you go to concealed carry class, always put two hands on it, make sure you sight it down. The guy just reached out and shot the damn thing. He looked like Matt Dillon, for God's sake. Anyway, so John, we had to break up this crazy market. What do you think is going on here? Is the world coming unglued? We've got. I was reading you talked to me yesterday about the riots in Britain. So all the right wingers, I'm not saying right wingers like our right wingers, the Nazis and all the other people over there. They overwhelm the fact that the guy who stabbed all these people actually was born in Britain, and they're saying he was an immigrant, and now they're tearing the place down because of immigration, even though the guy's not an immigrant.
Yeah, it's a cause célèbre. I mean, I think he's from Rwandan parents who were immigrants, so he himself is not. You know, he's clearly deranged. But you know, this is just—it's a poster child for stuff that's been happening in Britain for years now, and doesn't get. You know, that much press, certainly in the mainstream media, and it's got people riled up, you know, for some time. So this maybe wasn't the closest thing to what, you know, their immigration problem points to, but it's close enough for people to explode, I think.
What if his parents were from Poland or Ireland? Was the same thing? Is that's your cause?
Well, you know, this is one of the reasons, Tom, that, you know, Brexit was successful. This has been simmering for a long time. There's real rejection of the open borders policy in England, as you know, there is in other countries of Europe. But Britain is, seen dislocations and transformations of their, you know, village life, city life, in ways that, you know, the U.S. has sort of been spared, except in some, you know, high-profile areas. But it's been, you know, an ongoing, festering problem for them, and they see it in their job market, they see it in their economy, they see it in the, their safety. London has had an explosion of, you know, crime, which is being laid at the doorstep of a lot of their immigrants who are not assimilated, not interested in being assimilated, it seems, too. So I'm not, you know, I'm shocked but not surprised by any of this happening. There was going to be some kind of flashpoint, it's, you know, in some place, and this is what happened in Sunderland, you know, outside Liverpool, that was the case that really, you know, has now triggered a massive rejection of national policy. And you got, you know, Starmer, who's, you know, the Labour Prime Minister, who's ignored, and as has all the governments ignored, precipitating reasons for people's disaffection. They blame it on the people who are, who see their lives being upended and their jobs being taken away from them, that they're the problem. So this doesn't go down well at all either. And I think that the crackdowns that they're threatening now are going to have, you know, the effect of pushing people even farther, you know, to the limit of what they're going to try to do.
Well, Jan,
and the protests are likely to become even more violent and more widespread. So they're, so not, they're not handling it well.
Jan, if you were the host of Stacks and Jacks, this is what you would have to put up with from one of our fine contributors. You do not have a build for gymnastics. You would be, you would make a great pommel horse. How's that for a shot across the
bar? I knew I missed my calling time.
Jan, the only thing
that's
I can
say, as close as I'll get to the Olympics. Anyway.
I guess I'll be. I'm telling you what. I know the only, you guys, all you do is poo poo me. The only thing we could do, even at our age, we could be curlers. If we started working on it right now, we'd have to have Greg be the sweeper, but you and I could push the damn thing. We'd probably be good at that. We're pretty steady. It's like pitching softball. I could be good at that. They would do the thing on the ice. We could do that.
Yeah, I could hold myself up long enough. To,
no, you know. You're on one knee on the ice. You can't fall from one knee.
I could.
Could do our best.
We could do our. Anyway, you know, the thing that bugs the shit of me about all this, Jan, I wouldn't wish being a floor trader. No, Greg has been one, and a lot of people, because it's not for people. But there's one thing you learn that maybe other people don't quite get in whatever their walk of life is that somewhere along the line, you learn to look in the mirror and say, it's nobody's fault but yours. I was, take these 3 days, I was long 3 days in a row playing the bounce. Oops. Oops. Because guess what? Get my ass kicked for 3 days.
Me
if I was
too.
Long for 3 days. This happens. And there's nobody else around to blame it on. And what you just said, Jan, by the way, you're absolutely spot on in people's, you know, I'll be quite blunt on a day like this when he's getting their ass kicked. I am so pissed off about, for black people saying, if only they weren't black, they'd have gotten into Harvard. And then you walk next to a white guy, I would have got into Harvard if only they didn't take the black people first. Get over it. Go to another school. If you're that smart, if you're that willing to work, you're going to be just as well off. Quit complaining. It's not always somebody else's fault. Or am I just being a knothead for saying that?
No, but you know,
and you didn't go to Harvard. You're doing fine, right?
Well, yeah, and I'm happy I didn't. You know, so.
You're spot.
Much happier today if I were a kid that I weren't.
Well, you spend your whole life sitting in a trailer wearing a wife beater shirt with the beer, bitching that some girl or some black guy got your spot, and the only thing you could do after that was go pump gas. Come on, I mean, I'm over that. I'm just, you know, being
says the person who went to UChicago.
Well, but I mean, if I couldn't have got in there, you know what? Here's the thing, though, Greg. One of my best clients. his son played softball. He's a hell of a ball player. He tells me a long, long time ago. He says, "How about talking with, you know, whatever kid's name is?" I said, "Well, bring him down to Notre Dame game." He goes, "We're going down there. Why don't you come to the we're having a tailgate, blah blah blah." I kick him his butt. Of course, we give him a beer, even though he's not 21. And I said, "Hey, you know, how things going in school?" "Well, you know, maybe not so hot." And I said, "You know, the kid's name's Patrick." I said, "Patrick, you know, here's the deal. I said, when you start to screw off, I didn't say screw off, you start to screw off like this, I said, you're kind of wrecking yourself. I said, here's the deal, and I'm not telling you to be like me. I don't want anybody to be like me. I said, when I was in school, and you know, of course it was different, I was the first kid in the family going to college. I said, I don't have that much of an ego about a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm not that great of an athlete and blah, blah, blah. I said, but one thing I wanted to do is I never wanted anybody to reject me and tell me no. I said, so in high school, I studied enough. By the way, I played a lot of ball, did all the other stuff that people do. I said, but I did well enough that I never wanted to send a letter to a college and get the letter back saying no. And at Notre Dame, I did the same thing. I mean, obviously, John, did anybody go to more bars or play more basketball than I did? Yet, I did my homework first. Because I never wanted somebody to say at the University of Chicago, we don't want you, or you can't get in, or get thee to God knows where. That, you know, I never wanted to be rejected. And I knew the price to pay to get there. So, I mean, that's what...
Yeah, but now there's affirmative action. You can't get there.
Well, you can be someplace. Okay, I mean, I don't know if I'd have gotten anywhere in Chicago today.
It'd be a but lot cheaper to go somewhere else.
But I'd have gone to Indiana. I
mean, it's like eight.
I'd have gone to Indiana. I'd have Russell teaching me. I'd be fine. You know? I mean, it's... What I'm saying... I'm not trying to... What I'm saying is this idea that every time you don't do something, it's somebody else's fault. It's just not. It's yours. Am I being too pedantic here, Jen? How's that for
a word? No, I hear what you're saying. I feel the same way. But, you know, I mean, when I think about my job history, places I was rejected for, you know, I was supposedly overqualified when I first came out of college. I had a lot of disappointments, jobs I thought I could do and learn something from. Nobody had any interest in interviewing me because I had a college degree. At the time, I thought, I'm certainly in the wrong lane here for job search, but that was, you know, 74. It wasn't a great job market at all, as I remember. But I remember thinking that, you know, I never would, you know, feel like I was debasing myself by taking a lower level job, even a menial job, or, you know, physical labor, because I would felt like I would do the best I could at it, and, you know, give credit to me and my family and everybody else in the way I treated it. There was no job that I would be ashamed of having. But, you know, that was, you know, me, and that's kind of the climate I was in, and that's how I made do at a time when there weren't a lot of job offers, except ones that I probably was overqualified for, but I wasn't really qualified to do a lot of the jobs that, you know, were out there.
You take them anyway, John, and you'll learn. I hope you don't screw up too far.
You don't miss any opportunity to pick up something and find a way to use it, and that's been the story, I think, every working person's life. If you continue to hold a job, you're always finding some way to use what you've spent years acquiring skills for, and, you know, remain adaptable and be willing to learn and don't get too full of yourself. I think that's probably more important now than it ever was, but. A lot of people were more impatient than that, and, you know, aren't satisfied with just taking a job to take a job. So,
well, the University of Chicago part, that one of the reasons that, matter of fact, the main reason why that was the choice, A, because it's a good school, but I was able to live at home and work truck docks over the weekend. I came out of grad school with more money than I went in. I couldn't have done that if I went to Michigan or other place. I'd have paid room and board, and where was I going to get a job like that in Ann Arbor?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it was 50%, University of Chicago is 50% because I could drive over there in the morning and commute. And how many people get to commute from home in University of Chicago? I mean, it was, you know, I suppose if I lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan would have been the choice, but my brother's, well, turned out as being his father-in-law, got me a job at the ICX. And I was working Friday night. I started at 6. It was 6 to 2. Well, after 12, you got time and a half. And then most Saturdays, they'd say, we need it tomorrow morning. So I'd shoot home, try and get 3 hours sleep, and I was back there at 8 o'clock and work from 8 to 4 on Saturday at time and a half. So I actually got the equivalent of almost 3 days' pay for two shifts' work. This is while I was going to school, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if I had gone to some other place, I mean, I sure had a nice experience there, too, but economically, there was no comparison. You know, and it took me 25 minutes to get from home to the University of Chicago, park along the midway there, try not to get killed on the Ryan. But anyway, Jen, what we see this, now we're down 3.4%. We got to talk about it more. What do you make of this kind of, obviously every day, and it's gotten more increasing in the last 6 months, and maybe people didn't want to hear it, but the market got more and more, and I'm not about to pat myself on the back and say I'm long puts this morning because I didn't know the timing. I
was here's a good one for you. I'm usually long, you know, some puts just because, you know, when you're a trader, you got to have
because you're a negativist. You always
want puts. Right. And, you know, I rolled all my puts to weeklies. And so just to give you an idea of the universe, yeah, I was long a bunch of puts, but they all expired on Friday.
Well, it's, you know, that happens.
Yeah. So even when you're right, sometimes you're wrong. So
First of all, I've never acted on insider information. I never really had any, except once. This guy had used to trade for me, and he's kind of a goofball. He was no longer trading for me, but I meet him. We played handball or something. Well, he goes, you know, actually, he called me, and he goes, I won't say the name of the company. I'm essentially, I'll be nice. We're on the air. I'm having a relationship. How's that, John? With some young lady whose name is, you know, X. I go, you mean those exes? And he goes, well, yeah. And he says, she tells me that the company's being taken over. And I go, I've got these calls. This is on a Friday. I've got all these calls in this company because I think it's going to be taken over. But you know what? They're going out. It didn't happen today, so they're all going out worthless. I think I'm going to buy some more next week. I said, well, thank God it was account through us. I would have said not through us or not. So he didn't have any over the weekend. When do you think he got taken over the weekend? And after having calls for like, you know, 3-4 months.
That's when it happens.
Yeah, he didn't have it. And he's like, I'll just wait till Monday. Oops. I wasn't so unhappy that he didn't make money on insider information, but I'm sure the young lady made a lot of money, and they were soon parted, I think, but anyway, but so John, this is not just a little correction here. This is three days in a row. I mean, where were we? I'll take a look here. Where were we on the Qs?
Reminder: we're still up 10% for the year.
I get that, but I'm looking. 12. Where were we on Wednesday night in the Qs? Let me get the graph here. Chart. We can't call it a graph. Whatever you call it, a graph. The guys that our chartist bitch at you. So Wednesday would have been where we were the second. So the second was Friday, so it would have been July 31st, correct?
So that was July 31st. Yeah.
So July 31st, we were at 471, and now we're 426. So it's 10% in 3 days.
Oops. Seems like a long time ago.
Oh. Sure does. Oops.
But you know, Tom, when you see numbers like we're seeing now, the futures for today, for example, it makes you think of anniversaries or, you know, places, times where you've been here before. It's just inevitable, you know, where there's been a similar kind of, you know, shock event where it makes people completely rethink, you know, what's going on. And
well, where's the event here? Where's the event?
Think about 2008.
Yeah,
and it was an election year too, and there's some points of comparison. You know, after a horrible spell of real estate disasters since 2006, really.
All right, so there was a catalyst there. You just named it.
Yeah, and that, you know, also, you know, we had lingering wars and paying for wars that we thought we had won or somehow ended, and they hadn't. There's great disaffection with, you know, our foreign policy under Bush too. And you know, you had, you know, a presidential campaign that looked like it was a way out to people. You had what looked like fresh blood with Obama, and, you know, old blood like McCain. And now we're in an election cycle too with a lot more volatility than we had then. And on the international stage, considerably more volatility. And, you know, the markets don't like instability, close to or far from home. It doesn't really matter. We've got, have had instability up the wazoo for some time. So in a way, nobody should be particularly shocked that this is happening. It was bound to happen at some point, and it's always, you know, good to be able to withstand it when it happens and not just throw in the towel. but it's been coming for a long time, and there's been lots of warnings for it.
Where are the warnings other than on this show? And a few people on CNBC that can't wait to get off quick enough.
You know, the split in, you know, wealth, you know, which is just, you know, over the top, worse now than it was in 2008, where you've got, you know, the middle class that's being annihilated and has been annihilated now for decades. And it's kind of reaching, you know, a critical point with, you know, inflation that's made it hard for people to, you know, own a house, own a car, feed yourselves or your family, pay for school, pay for anything pretty much. We're in a far worse situation with those issues than we were in 2008 and have been, you know, for a number of years. And there's no surprises there either. It's been a trend all in the same direction. So this is all just to say that I'm not surprised. I couldn't have predicted the day or precipitating event that would bring it on, but something.
Well, but therein lies the rub. If you're trading, you got to find the day.
Yeah, and you know you look around at the surrounding events, and you've had a political assassination attempt. You've had pretty much a bloodless coup against the sitting president by the insiders in his own party. Those are unprecedented events in any, you know, news cycle, let alone happening within a couple weeks of each other. So,
by the way, this is the 50-year anniversary of Tricky Dick letting out the tapes.
Yep, and Nixon resigned, what, August 1?
4 days after the tapes came out.
Yeah.
But, but you're asking actually, John, the million-dollar question. I mean, I think the thing in 2007-08 was somewhat more predictable because of the leverage was there for all to see. And
we're talking about bigger moves, though, now. We're talking about, like, call it international moves where people are borrowing in yen and then buying U.S. stocks. These are much bigger stock market.
In the real estate market, the reason why there was $35 of leverage on every dollar of mortgages is because people were borrowing in yen at 2% and buying 6.5% mortgage pools here.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but what's happening now is the reasons for those are unwinding. So not only are they going to stop doing that, but that trade is unwinding, meaning the players in that game are much bigger than the players in the U.S. real estate game.
Well, Craig, you've been doing the show now for a long time. I've been for, and this is not a me thing. The numbers and people that can afford homes versus the home prices. Now there's no leverage on it, so there's not the catalyst like there was in 7 and 8, but the numbers are way worse than they were in 7 and 8.
I'm talking about the markets underlying. That are moving and unwinding these smaller trades in the U.S. are the huge markets where they're buying yen, or they were, and then borrowing yen and converting them to dollars and then buying stocks or something. Those are the trades that are international trades that are unwinding, not just call it over leverage in the U.S. These are over leverage in the global markets. Well, and yes, the S&P is the biggest one.
But I guess what we're trying to determine here is, okay, you look at any of these numbers, there's been a progression. You and John are absolutely correct. But I'm kicking back at you to drawing more analogy out of you because, okay, I mean, I've been sitting here like a dummy talking about revenue times stock versus stock price, PE, earnings versus stock price, and these things are in some of these companies they're way worse than they were in 2000, but the companies are 2 and 3 and 4 times as big, and they're not even on the same planet. You're talking about Nvidia, and you're talking about these kinds of places. When Microsoft has a 12 or 13% revenue times price, for God's sake, I mean, a revenue per share, those are Greg's restaurant when you start out your first year. It isn't a company that size. The company's too big. Okay, so I've been saying that for 3 years now. And as soon as the show's over, I listen to TV all day long, and everybody's telling you Microsoft's the best buy-in. By the way, they're obviously a very successful company. All it does is go up. Because
yeah, but countries are bigger than the companies.
Okay, what I'm saying is, and you and I and John and everybody else does the show, we're sitting there saying, okay, these numbers are getting to the point where they really can't get any bigger. But now, does that mean, I mean, as early as last Tuesday, I said,
we're talking about
we can grow into this.
The national or the banks, like the Bank of Japan versus the Fed and versus the
they've been amazingly
those
coordinated.
Those guys are right now, you're getting the traders who are saying, uh-oh, this trade isn't going to work anymore. Where can we get some cash? How do we carry these margins? Like, these are the problems that are happening, you know, at the highest level, because the central banks are changing their tunes. So,
well, we don't know it sounds like, looks like they might be. The coordination, you and I talked about this 2 weeks ago. Their coordination seems to be falling apart a little bit. For a long time, through COVID and everything, they were amazingly coordinated. If one put money in the system, so did the other one. So if you were to say, you know, some dummy like me might say, hey, boy, you know, the value of your dollar is going down. It's not the price of the market that's going up.
Well, the Japanese decided to say, we're going to pay interest on our, for the first time, and however, we're going to start paying higher interest rates. And all of a sudden, the yen takes off like a bat out of hell. And then all these other trades that are centered around the idea that, hey, we've got cheap money somewhere else. We can probably borrow there and then buy what's going up. Well, that idea has gone away now.
Well, for 3 weeks.
Right. And that is much more important.
But
than,
it wouldn't have happened if than it's happening.
Anything
who knows?
Related. We even if stocks kept going up, this would still be a big issue. But stocks are...
Go ahead, John.
What do you think the role of China is in this thing of the moment right now?
How about we do that role after we take our quick break? Because it's 7:00. We do a real quick break. I was just going to bring that up, John. Thank you. Is it? What about the fact that China's not paying anybody or doesn't? I mean, that's been
not
totally...
not going to publish their stock data anymore. It's going to be quarterly rather than daily.
But, I mean, there's people that have to have lost... I mean, Greg's all... He's right in what he's saying. What about the fact that China has all kinds of debt issues? And by the way, a lot of people here, you couldn't turn the TV on 4 years ago and not hear the word China every 30 seconds. I mean, there's a lot of people that have money over in China. Maybe they've seen, you know, the handwriting on the wall and they've written it down, and maybe it's only, you know, 2% of CalPERS investments, and, you know, they'll live to fight again. I mean, we hope that, but we really don't know, do we? I mean, nobody seems to have Dan Janitis, who knows more about this than anybody we know, he can't tell us. Dan, who owns all this thing in China? He goes, I keep trying to find out. I can't find out. I mean, is it BlackRock? I mean, somebody has money over there, and they're not getting... I mean, nobody was involved in those two big real estate... Not real estate. What do they call it? What are the guys that went under? Was it Evergreen?
Evergrande and Country Gardens. Or
yeah, I mean, is it nobody's involved with that?
Well, it's reputed. There's like 40 Chinese banks that just disappeared the last count. So, you know, that means that those liabilities are assumed by Communist Party.
But it's not just the liabilities, John. It's the transactions. What if those banks have a currency transaction that doesn't match up? Good Lord. Greg is absolutely correct by saying this all ties together. What if there's got to be... Greg,
it's the dog is the actual currency market and the bond market. The tail is the equity markets.
Well, yeah. if we could get our buddy Robert in town this week, who's our man at the Federal Reserve that knows all about international clearing and stuff, I gotta believe that Robert could tell some tales. Now, he probably wouldn't tell us this move in the yen. Somebody somewhere is having a problem delivering here, don't you think?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a crisis. First of all, I mean, like I said, John, you brought up the point, so let's keep on it. We've sort of, and Greg,
I thought
too,
we were going to break.
Well, we're blowing off the 7:00 break. Screw it. The S&P futures down 191. Every time we go to break, the market goes down. So I mean, get a load of this. Nasdaq down 947. That's 5%. Ouch. So anyway, if all of a sudden this current, and what's the number? Is it $1 trillion a day that settles internationally Greg? It's some massive number,
yeah,
like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's way bigger than the stock market, way bigger than the bond market. Now, what if in this kind of a move, I don't think I've ever seen this kind of a currency move.
Now, what kind of looks weird to me is that the bonds haven't moved as much. So what I think you'll see today is they're probably pricing in rate cuts as we speak. I'm guessing the futures have...
Okay, but what's a half...
Emergency rate cuts.
What's a half point rate cut going to do?
Well, it's going to...
Save us?
It's something that they're probably looking forward to.
Well, sure they are, but what's it going to save us? Means your credit card bill's going to go down?
No.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So, but I think both of you are around to something. John, just because we don't know what the catalyst is right now doesn't mean there isn't one. Is some bank with this currency move out of business today? And if all of a sudden they can't, it's hard for even me to explain it because I don't know, I'm not Mr. Foreign Policy stuff, but if all of a sudden a normal bank, Greg, on any given day, how many people do you think, like BMO Harris, how many Deutsche Banks are they either buying or selling? No, Deutsche Bank. How many euros are either buying or selling? How many on a given day? It's probably in the hundreds of millions of dollars, right? Just regular transactions. Somebody buying oil, somebody buying this, somebody buying that, right? Somebody buying sneakers from someplace or Adidas or someplace. What if somebody, the edge on them is so small. There's not that much money in a currency trade. Say it's, what is it, 1/100th of something, your fee?
It's not much money in a currency trade until you've got the spread being over trillions of dollars. And I mean, it's...
What if somebody doesn't show up?
What if
sudden one bank screws up? Oh, I owe you guys.
Then the other ones are tripping over themselves.
Right.
To,
right.
Yeah.
It's not like there's a central clearinghouse. That's why the people at the U.S. Fed, as much grief as we all give them, a few years ago, all this stuff settles at the same minute. You imagine a day like today when Robert was telling us about the money going from here. I don't know which direction. The dollar is going from here to say euros. Or Deutsche Banks, wherever it was way back then, would clear at 10 o'clock in the morning, and the stuff coming this way would clear at 11. And nobody thought there was a problem. So sure enough, one bank went under at like 10:30 and right. Screwed the whole thing. I mean, it wasn't even that big of a bank. It doesn't have to be that big of a bank because the edges are so small.
Even they got real trouble here.
Yeah, so all of a sudden now they all clear at the same time, which is a way better system. What makes you think today there isn't somebody who can't come up with the scratch? And that's why this is happening. This is not just somebody listened to Stocks and Jacks 2 weeks ago and heard the goofballs on there talk about the market's too high. We didn't cause this. Something did. What do you think it is, Jen? I have no idea. I mean, we got our guys texting in, the market was too high, but I get all that. But why today? Why this fast? Will we ever know?
The easiest explanation without having any evidence would be that there was some theft or some loss of tracking of a huge sum of money or some assets or some funny bookkeeping business. I really think that's what's likely to have this kind of cataclysmic effect, where it isn't just a response to uncertainty or fear of future. It's about some crookedness that has meddled with the system and made the system impossible to function.
Could it be a flaw in Bitcoin? Bitcoin's down $8,500.
Bitcoin.
I'm lobbing them out there. There's a trillion and some dollars in Bitcoin.
It's
right?
Be Bitcoin a planted is an problem rounding error.
It doesn't have to be something. Could it be some sort of a sabotage, attack of some kind? I don't know.
No, it's people getting in trouble on these giant carry trades and these giant currency trades.
What's the total market cap of Bitcoin? I thought it was approaching $1 trillion.
Who cares? It's not.
I'm saying it's down 15%. I mean, you're telling me what it isn't. I'm saying, okay, what is it?
So
we postulate it might be a currency screw up.
And this is after it's been writing.
It's 109 trillion around in the stock market. So total market cap of Bitcoin of let's just do crypto.
The reason why I'm asking,
it says 1.8.
Yeah, so the reason why I'm asking you guys this, can anybody tell me,
or 1.9 almost,
can anybody tell me why the crash in 1929 was on that day and not a day before or after. Can anybody, boy, and this one sits close to home. All this stuff, when I talk about this, if the crash of 87 would have happened on Friday, John, I'd have a Duesenberg in the garage. I had so many puts that expired Friday night and not enough on Monday morning. It was a life-changing event. So if you can explain to me why that happened on Monday and not the Monday before or the Monday after.
Because that's when people are weakest, when they're uncovered over the weekend.
But I'm saying why all of a sudden, there was no coverage in 29. There was no puts. But I'm saying why did August of 82? I was down here for 15 months, saw the interest rates were actually coming down and the market was going down, not up. Matter of fact, I went through that thing 3 weeks ago about how when the interest rates actually started coming down, how the market was actually down. You couldn't get people to put money in the market. Because for 10 years, it had nothing to go straight down. We're not going anywhere. Now all of a sudden... go ahead, John.
What was the role in 29 with the delay in data transmission? You know, would there be a lag in the ticker?
29? You had tickers.
And I mean, how much of this, you know, delayed the effect of the crash in 29 just because people were not able to ascertain just how bad things had got until hours.
Well, there was a delay, but there also was your margin was 1-to-1. Now there was no. Now there's a, that's one of the big changes that took place after the 29 crash. Right now, say today, you're thinking there's a bounce here. You want to buy 1,000 shares of pick a stock. You want to buy 1,000 shares of Johnson & Johnson. Okay, it's trading 100. Let's say it's trading 162. You only have to send PTI 81,000, not 162. So you can borrow 50%. All right. Everybody, I think, knows that or should know that. But in before 29, if the stock dropped a dollar today, you had to send the rest of the money in. It was like a futures trade. But now your initial margin is 50. Your maintenance margin is 30. So I'm going to say, without doing the math in my head here, I'm going to say Johnson & Johnson probably has to slip 15, 20 bucks before you get a margin call. Now you're losing money, and now your equity is only 30% of your of where the stock is. You're losing money, but you don't have to send us a check or sell the stock until it becomes 30%. So the quick math probably puts that way. Where, Greg? 140, maybe? Somewhere in there. So all of a sudden, now in 29, you had to match dollar for dollar. So once it started to go down, people had to sell instantly. Sort of like they do in the future still here, if you have minimum margin up. So that has been changed quite a bit. And a lot of the people who are in the market now are in ETFs, they're in ETFs, but they're 401ks and their IRAs, which don't allow you to have margin. So even if today, we have all kinds of IRAs here, if somebody's got $1 million IRA and all of a sudden the market's down 5% today and now they got 950, there's no forced selling on anybody's part. I mean, you might be pissed off and want to sell, but the fact is there's no force. We're not going to call up John Flanagan and his IRA and say, hey, NVIDIA's down, where is it down? It's down $15 now, it's 14%. We're not going to say, okay, John, you got to sell something here. You don't have to. There's no forced selling. So there's not. So in that way, the market's way more insulated than it was in 29. Now, the fact that people might have short puts out there, that's another story, but I don't know how many. I don't think people were shorting puts as much as they were in 87. But, there's all kinds of stuff we've talked about. I mean, NVIDIA, like I said, is down like 15% here. Now, we have talked, there have been rumors that I tried not to talk about, that somehow or another NVIDIA was lending money to people that were basically lining up to buy their product. Don't know if that's true or not. If it is, that's a problem if it ever becomes a problem. Carl talks all the time that the minute somebody gets a faster chip that uses less power, in that business it moves so fast, that in that business all of a sudden you lose your entire backlog. Now, I don't think that's happening. We may find out a week from now that all of a sudden, Bitcoin was lending money, that they lost a quarter of their back. The idea that there's no reason, there is a reason, we just don't know it yet, right?
Right.
It
may take decades to go.
The reason is the bond markets are changing.
Well,
and this is only, a 10% move in stocks, That's
interest rates are down. That should be positive for stock in the last week or two.
The global competitive market is changing big time because of what is happening in the Japan, and I guess what's happening in the election here too, but it's not one cause. It's these complex system of the currencies and the bonds adapting to what.
I'm not going to argue about any of that, but not one of these reasons, and all the people texting in, not one of these reasons said, here it is, we should have known Friday afternoon, we should have bought puts. Not one thing anybody said here was actionable on Friday, unless we know that all of a sudden Friday afternoon NVIDIA lost a big chunk of their business.
Who knows? Maybe they're planning a war or something in the Middle East. I don't know. But
I'm saying there's no reason that I see today, which doesn't mean there isn't one, means that I don't see it, that says, you three idiots, why didn't you buy puts on Friday? Are you seeing it? I don't. I mean, yeah, was stuff too high? It's been too high for 5 years.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of where I'm coming with, John. I mean, to be blunt, I'm pissed off. I don't have any puts this morning. You know, I've got some I've got my normal protective puts for my clients. So I'm going to say if the market's down,
they're probably pretty happy.
I'm sure they're real happy. But they're not.
The question is, where are you going to sell them and where?
We're going to try and roll them down.
Yeah.
No, well, but here's
saying Friday, the activity on those days really, it kind of amazed me to watch them unfold throughout the day, because I check in periodically to see what it's doing, and there were enormous swings up and down Thursday more than Friday.
Well, one guy who does look pretty good is then when Berkshire announced that huge Apple sale, that probably they're long 4%, it said, of the outstanding treasuries. Those are going to look pretty good.
Well, yeah, I mean, he sold a lot of his Apple. Allegedly.
He sold Apple, and he was buying bonds. That one looks pretty good today.
But he didn't cover the rest of his Apple by buying puts. He doesn't do that.
Right, he doesn't do that. But I mean, are you going to complain about being long 4% of the? He's got more bonds than the Fed.
Well, but what I'm saying is, if you Apple's down, I've got Apple down. Apple's down $19. So if you sold 10% of your holdings.
No, they sold half.
Okay, well, what happened to the other half? Where was the puts?
So if he's down...
And Bank of America stock, too. Didn't Buffett liquidate all of his Bank of America stock?
They were selling... I don't know, but they've got 270-some billion in cash, and that's all probably going to look great today. He doesn't care about the stock portfolio because that's already... You know, he's already... I mean, that's not a... They're long term, so I don't think they're selling. They'll never sell that stuff. So
he just did. Sold half of it.
Well, if your market cap is, I don't know, if it's 900 billion, you can't have. What's the appropriate amount to keep in reserve? It's somewhere around 20% or so.
I'll give you an example. One of my buddies, I'll just call him Doc, not Dr. J. John knows what I'm talking about. His mom's still alive, John, believe it or not. Was sharp as a tack, one of the nicest ladies. I mean, in our day, Greg, we know everybody's mothers because they come down for tailgates and all this stuff. And if you called somebody up, the mom answered the phone, right? Nobody had a cell phone. So you knew the mom as much as you did your friend. So I'm over to party at his place, and this is before the 2000. And he had just bought a bunch of, was it Citigroup or something? Might have been 2007. And, she goes, hey, Jimmy tells me bought this stock and it's down, and he tells me we're in for the long term. Does that mean it's a crappy stock? And I go, yep. We're in for the whatever you say, you're in for the long. What do they say to the trading floor? If you buy something for the day, it's a trade. You buy it for 2 days, it's an investment. And by the way, we're not investors, we're traders, or something along those lines.
Right.
So, John, yeah, I mean, as a guy who just kind of watches it, I'm stunned that this is getting worse. We're not on 6% in the NASDAQ. We're down 1,125 points. Like I say, my people...
This is where the margin calls start.
Yeah, we've got puts on everybody. We should have two at this point. I mean, no matter how good you're doing, when you're we're not making
well, the
money.
Idea behind puts is you're protected against what you would have lost. I mean, if they would have down 6%, the whole idea is you pay for that, and then when you actually are down 6%, you're down way less than that. So that's a win.
It's a win is walking away with more money than you showed up with.
Who's greedy now?
I'm just saying it.
The world's falling apart. Tom's okay.
Well, I'm saying that's what a win is.
It's not the world's falling apart. We're still up 10% for the year.
We're leaking it. But you know what? I'll tell you what. I'll make one easier for you two guys. Instead of trying to figure out why today is happening, tell me what the hell happened last Wednesday with that huge rally. Where did that come from?
That's
so we were down Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We had this big rally. It just turned around the next day in a nano. Who are those guys buying Wednesday?
You just always say interest rates. That's the end. Well, interest rates changed.
But if we talk about a tone change, though, between Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
I mean, Wednesday, I don't know where that day came. So are we buyers today, guys? We got Audrey coming on. We got all kinds of real estate stuff to talk about. John, we're going to talk about that place... you know the place in New York that went for $8.5 million?
Oh, 135 West 50th Street. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's
but that didn't include the property. That's fake news.
What do you mean didn't include it? What is it, a lease?
So what they reported on was the transaction of just the building, whereas the last transaction that they talked about was the property and the building.
Okay.
So it's just clickbait.
How do you separate the building from the place?
Easy.
I mean, but how many people do that?
A lot. Isn't all the loop like that?
No. Well, that's a giant question.
A lot of the loop, you know, they've done a sale and lease back.
A 99-year land lease, right?
Appreciate the building. Or they've just, you know, divided properties so the improvements are separate legal description from the land, which is less the improvements. So at different taxing, you know, ID numbers and everything else for it. So, it's fairly common now.
All right, so what is... Well, after break, you and Audrey can go into what are the person who still owns the land, what does he do? I mean, so the guy, the thing totally degrades. What are his responsibilities?
Well, he's got a ground lease, you know, with the building occupying it. And, you know, so there's income on the lease. And the lease has a separate tax ID number for the leasehold, which could be a 99-year lease or, you know, a long-term lease. So it's separately taxable. So the landlord doesn't, you know, the land doesn't have to worry about the tax liability for the building because... Or she has a separate, you know, tax ID number.
Do you have any liability? You have a separate tax bill? These are questions for after the break. We get Audrey on, but right, we got two more minutes to talk about the market here. Are we buyers here or no?
Seller of volatility.
Well,
yeah, I don't know if I'd be buying.
I'm selling insurance.
Well, I'm guessing the Qs are at 422. I'll bet our puts are.
Where's the VIX?
Oh God, the VIX is over 50.
Bingo.
Let me get the number here. What the hell is it? 6301.
See? That's what you
want
to sell.
Because now who's the seller of volatility if the big firms already have too many shorts?
The big firms usually...
And you're going to tell me how I shouldn't have bought that VIX call spread.
I'm going to tell you how you shouldn't have bought that VIX call. God. It's silly to do that.
Oh, God. I'd only be up all of it.
No, if you want to be... Yeah, you'd be...
I'd have paid $1.50.
It would be worth nine.
I'd be worth nine, and you're telling me it's a horrible product. It should be worth $9.50. I think I'd have been happy.
The point is, when you want to do that, you're better served just to buy the puts.
John, you've been a teacher forever. All these young guys like this guy?
Well, God bless the youth, Tom.
Something. Let me get this straight.
To do that.
I wanted to buy a spread for $1.50. He told me I'm out of my mind.
Silly to do that. You have no... control of the underlying. The futures are untradeable.
What do I have control over in the market? Nothing.
No, like these are the products that get people in trouble. Even if you're long. Like these are the things that the VIX futures is about as hard as it gets to trade anything. So if you can't trade that and you have no way of getting the swap agreements from, I don't know. I think you need an ISDA to do
so
that.
So, John, here's a guy that if you were 100 years old, you said, I should have bought a Honus Wagner rookie card. He'd say, nah, you wouldn't want that because he's an idiot. his Honus Wagner.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's much better ways to be long volatility than to be trying to buy the VIX.
Oh God. So John, are you? Well, when I guess we'll be a buyer in one sense. That I mean, our puts for our people in the queues got to be hell. They got to be the 50s. You know, we're down to 422. We're down 26 points in the queues. It's over six. That's 6%. I'm going to say we don't want the 50 puts anymore. We're going to roll down to the 30. So that it, essentially, we're going to be a slight buyer today if we get the put spread done. So I guess we're going to be a buyer of the dip, but we're not going to just go in there and buy. You know, we have also a lot of clients that have, you know, literally millions of dollars in T-bills. Now, we might get some calls today to say, I'll leak out a 10% of that. Let's try and put our toe in the water. We'll see how the day brings. I mean, we might get some clients that want to do that. We'll still be protected, but now if you buy the puts, they're real expensive, but if you sell calls against them, you get money back for that, so you end up breaking even, right, Greg and Naval?
Yeah, but when we're thinking about actually putting real money to work, meaning investing, you're talking about investing, right, not trading?
Yeah.
So what's the appropriate amount of money to put in? Well, if the market is averaging, what, 7.5% or more per year, and we're down 6% today, well, you might want to start thinking about putting, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. But
it may be a quarter or half of what you would yearly put in. I mean,
if you got to be careful. You can say Jan Flanagan, he's batting 320. He just struck out. You know, I mean, can't you go from the long to the short like that?
Well, as if, you know, putting on the investor hat, how much do you invest per year? And how much are you expecting to make on it? Meaning, if you're expecting 7.5% per year, and all of a sudden we get a 10% dip, you know, you'd ideally want to put in enough money for that year by the time we're down 7.5%.
Well, the cost of protection is going to be pretty darn high today. Right. How many times have we talked about that market goes down, the cost of protection gets higher, not lower.
Right.
Well, Greg, thank you. We're going to go to break, and then we'll have Aud come in. John, you hang around for Aud because you guys got to explain these buildings. SP Futures, I don't even want to give out these numbers. I'm down 244, 4.5%. The NASDAQ is down 1,108, 6%. I've never seen this. Maybe 1987 crash. We're down 22%. Let's not go there. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage
advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Low and Walk-Based Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Ed Byrne on the board. Speaking of tasting the Mondays, I would take a gummy if you've got one before we go through this. S&P futures down 248, 4.6%. Yeah, 248. Not 24, 248. NASDAQ futures down 1180, 6.3%. Dow futures down 1180, 3%. And we actually have a couple stocks up in the Dow, or to be worse. We've got Amgen up 3.6. But the major stocks, the seven sisters that were going to take us into the new century, get a load of this. Tesla, well, Apple down $22. That's over 10%. Just think, $22 times 15 billion shares outstanding. $350 billion market cap down the drain here in Apple this morning. Tesla down 22, that's 11%. Microsoft down 25, 6%. 25 in Microsoft. Meta, which was up on Friday because they had earnings, up down 47, that's 10%. Google down 11, 6.8%. Here's the one. NVIDIA down 1530, 14%. I think these guys have 24 billion shares outstanding. So 24 billion times 15 is $400 plus billion in market cap. How does anybody even imagine how much money that is, much less to lose it in one day in market? Ugh. The rest of the world's not much better, if better at all. The DAX down 603, 3.4%. FTSE down 247, 3%. Kakaran down 200, 2.7. They're not doing as bad. That's because they're winning medals. And by the way, the Olympics have been really cool over in Paris. Asia, really hang on to your seat. Nikkei down 4,400 bucks, 12.4%. Hang Seng down 247, 1.5. That's not bad. Shanghai down 44, 1.5. U.S. on Friday was bad enough. Dow was down 610, S&P down 100, NASDAQ down 417. So we're over double that today. Bonds down 12 basis points, 3.68. The bonds, these are not bonds, these are the 10-year rates. The Bund down 7%, 7 base points, 2.08. Japan down 21.74, and that's going to get worse when we do the currencies here. Oil down $1.15, 72.37, so way below the bottom end of that range. Brent down 101, 75.80. Natural gas down 7 cents, 189. Gold, which was up last night when this all started, is not up anymore. Down 58 bucks, 2.4%. Silver down $1.64, that's 6.74. Nobody's going to want anything ever again, it looks like, today. A copper down 15 cents, 3.94. Big shot here. FX, the U.S. versus the Japanese yen. The Japanese yen is down 4.65. That's 3%. I haven't seen a 3% move in a currency since the Mexicans, like, devalued the peso or something. Japanese yen's not supposed to be like this. We're almost dead even against the euro, 109.8. British pound, same thing, 127.5. It's the yen that's causing all this carnage here. And Bitcoin down $8,600, 14.5%, 50,616. Matt, get us over to traffic, weather, and sports way before the sea of red here on my page.
Yeah, here, well, I got some better news for you. Currently 7:39 a.m. on August 5th, 2024. Weather in Chicago, 80 degrees this morning. Rain just hit downtown in the last couple minutes, but also just passed through the loop. We'll be around the area for at least the next hour, though.
It blew out our dish.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly out there. We could hardly see anything past, at least a mile or so. Though tonight, partly cloudy with a thunderstorm expected after midnight. Down in Phoenix, 91 degrees right now, hot and sunny. Heat will be dangerous with a high of 113 degrees. Let's get straight to the Olympics. USA leads in total medals with 72 accumulative and 19 total gold medals. In second, China, and France in third. In total yesterday, USA won 10 total medals. Big congrats to them. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed.
Odd, we have John still. What do you make of this market?
Well, you and I talked about it. I knew it was coming. This has been a long time coming, I think. And once you saw Friday, this is not your blip. This is going to be a move. And this is a move I don't think that you're going to turn around and come back from. So this is the signal of another trend. And I think it's actually an acknowledgement of what's, I think, the rest of the middle class knew. There's not much going on here to hold the world up. And things have been getting worse, and job reports have been getting worse.
You're coming in and out, Ed.
In contrast to the spin they want. So the world's in a pretty hard place right now.
Why didn't you tell me this on Friday?
So there's some puts. A change. It's a change coming.
I think you're right.
What?
Why didn't you tell me this on Friday?
This
to have some puts.
This is your official recession start. Told you guys a month ago that was the top of the real estate market around here, at least. And the market, I believe, was kind of artificially inflated for a long time. And everybody, as all of us know, been in the market for a while. People get complacent and they think the market can only go up. And this is going to be another lesson that people unfortunately have to learn. You know, that's why you literally need to hedge your portfolios, because this has been warning us for quite a while, and people just weren't paying attention, and they thought they were bulletproof, and here we are. And I don't think this is going to be recovered. You get a dead cat bounce, maybe, but I'm not even seeing that.
All right, you've been with me at dinner many times in the last year or so, and we've talked to either potential clients or friends of ours, I'm not about to talk a whole lot of business over dinner or anything, but I would say, what do you guys think? I mean, especially the ones that are close to retirement. So did you ever think about maybe lightening up and protecting some stuff? That was like a fart in church, that whole thought. I mean, everybody, this was going to be, as the poet once said, a man, he hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest, right? I even stopped talking to people about it, because what's the point? It was like talking to somebody in 1981 saying they should get out of a 15% CD and buy some mutual funds. The conversation just wasn't going anywhere. Everybody's absolutely convinced, because this is what's been happening for 10 years, that all you have to do is stay in there, and if anything bad ever happened, Fed puts some money in and it'll be up the next month. And there's a steady stream of people on TV all day long saying, only the idiots sell, only a moron ever try. Well, I'm not saying you should time the market, but only an idiot would ever sell, no matter what, it's always higher a month later. Well, you know, those conversations went nowhere. I mean, how many people really wanted to be protected? Nobody, right? Few people.
Well, no. And the fact that history repeats itself, the market repeats itself. The market is too high compared to what is going on in the world now. Was it wrong 2 months, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago? No. It wasn't wrong, I believe, up to about 10 months ago. But then all of these, it's just, the run's over. We've been fighting, as most of the world knows. I think we've had our recession. People have been struggling. Inflation is out of control. It's not better for anybody who has to buy food and gas. I don't care what the pundits are spinning. People are having a really hard time out there. So if people were feeling warm and cozy because their stock market never went down, this is it. I think you're gonna be in for a little attitude adjustment here. So, you know, this is not gonna, I don't believe this is gonna go away. The Fed waited too long, as they had tend to do with the interest rates. So this is gonna take a while.
Where do you think? And just John, come in on this one. We've seen the commercial real estate market essentially falling apart. I've seen no horror story about you know, some firm, not that I sure as hell want this to happen, that some firm, say, we all know about, you know, somebody who's on TV all the time, Joe's Investments, all of a sudden Joe's got a problem. We saw people invest in China for decades. China kind of falling apart. They're not paying a lot of bills. I haven't seen anybody saying Jim's Investments invested in China is falling apart. It seems like all the bad news has been somehow kept someplace. We can't even figure out who the hell owns this stuff over there.
It's been the media spinning it like anything else. Everything is good. Everything is wonderful. Everything's not wonderful. Now, I think this is different because the housing market, I don't think we're going to have a housing crash. I don't think that at all because people need the place to live, the houses. You know, it's getting better. There's more listings coming on the market. I don't think people need to fear that it's a housing bubble because you've had to work too hard to qualify. It's not like it was before. Boy, you have to have assets. You got to be documented that you could afford what you have. So I'm not worried about the houses, but I think the market has definitely, you definitely better check your portfolio.
Well, what are you talking about? And Jan, come in on this. I think the housing prices, I don't think the housing market, because of what you're saying, there's nowhere near the speculation or the craziness of 2000s.
There's nothing to speculate on because people who need a place to live have taken away.
But the median house price of 410, it wouldn't shock me at all if that isn't 370 a year from now. I don't think it's not a major disruption. But
no, I disagree with you there.
I know. Well, you're real estate. You always do. But that's okay. Jan, do I have anybody ever on the show?
I think we've hit the top. I think we're going to. Yeah.
Jan, would you ever? If I ever had a guest on the show that would ever agree with me, would you say I got the wrong person or what?
No, I think I'd get that person back on again and again.
Yeah.
It's good radio.
Does anybody ever agree with, whatever. But what happened? Who's holding? Now, Greg is right, by the way, to bring that up, the $8.5 million building in New York that used to be Sports Illustrated, I guess, sold, but now they somehow separated the property away. Now, Jan, somebody somewhere is taking, I don't know what they sold the property out for, somebody's taking this $100 million hit there, or $200 or $150 or whatever the number is. Somebody's taking these hits downtown. Has everybody got that much money that they all can just absorb this?
No. One North LaSalle, Tom, which when it was built in 1929, I think it was the tallest building in Chicago, predates the Board of Trade by a couple of years. It had been valued, I think, at $147 million up until 2023. Then the assessment of it went down to $80 million, and there was like a $70 million loan on it. It might have gone below the amount of the mortgage. Now the mortgage balance has been bid at auction by an investor who's taken, put in $20 million to get, what really was an $87 million loan originally. So they've stepped into the shoes of the lender. The loan, I don't think, was performing at this point, but you've got, somebody who, bought the indebtedness for $20 million. They could still assert the entire outstanding balance against the owner, up to $80 million, even though they only have $20 million in equity in it. And you got to wonder why somebody would do that to take over a non-performing loan. And I think it's going to put them in the position of owning the building before long, and they'll work out some deed in lieu of foreclosure thing. So they get the building for a $20 million investment. What they can do with it or how they can make any money on it remains to be seen. But I think that's going to be the playbook for a lot of these buildings of that vintage. This 47-story building, beautiful building, 33 North LaSalle, the next door building. All of these were built during the boom of the 20s, and then it just stopped dead. But they were first-class office buildings and always had lots of people fighting to get in.
Those are beautiful buildings. They're all so classic and elegant.
Oh, I worked in One North LaSalle for a number of years, and I would always be discovering things in it I never noticed. Just the detail and the beautiful design of it, and the efficiency of the whole thing. I thought it was just it always was an uplifting thing to work there. I thought so.
Well, Jan,
there's lots of buildings in that class, and they're all just like white elephants now. So I don't know.
Well, let me ask a question of Audrey a different way, so she can, even though she'll disagree. What you've said, Odd, and by the way, I'm going to agree with you first. Imagine that. If the housing prices, the median housing price drops from 400 to 375, say, or 370. And whether it will or it won't, you know, we can argue about it. If it does, I don't think it's that big of a deal here, because there's not that many people that have bought at the top, because you're saying, or people that have were sold and they're the cash buyers back and forth. I don't think it's going to cause as big of a problem as it did last time, even if it does happen. I imagine you agree with that.
Yeah, I do. Because again, people have to live somewhere. We're still short of housing. You might see a little bit of blip here or there, but I've not seen. I don't see a big, just looming disaster. So people shouldn't think that, because again, where are you going to go? You can't rent an apartment. Then they're going to become more scarce. Yep. And those will be more. You're going to still need a home. You need a roof over your head. I think that's going to be okay. I think, you know, like anything else, things fluctuate a little, but I'm not concerned about the housing market.
Well, this is somewhat of a technical question, and I don't know that you can't answer it. I didn't realize that people are separating the property from the building in these places. What does that do to your tax liability? Is that two separate bills then that go there, or how does that work?
Yeah.
What's the tax?
The value of the land without the buildings, the value of the improvements alone, they're assessed, you know, differently. One is land, one is improvements, and each owner of the respective pieces gets a separate tax bill. It can certainly be done. It's quite common.
All right. So the place was worth $330 or something a while back. They split the building off from the land. The guy buys the building for $8.5 million at auction, right? So now, are they going to say that the land is worth $320 million? I don't know where that's going to work. Or are they going to say that the guy who owns the property, he sure as hell is going to pay a tax bill on $310 million? Is he?
No. So on the land, you know, depending on how much of the land is occupied by the footprint of the building, it might be 100% of it.
But what I mean, I thought when because we have friends that are in that business, I thought the the taxation had to do more with the income of the place than it did with where it actually is.
Well, but vacant land, you know, this would be considered vacant if it had a building that had been separated from it for tax purposes. It would be land really without an improvement on it. So, I mean, the vacant land is taxed, you know. Just like any other improvement.
What's the tax on a vacant piece of property in Inglewood? $10 a year?
No, it'd be more than that, but it's not a lot more. And there's a lot of non-performing tax parcels too. But it's, you know, the fact that, you know, you still have, you know, you pay for hookups to, you know, the streets, utilities, everything. Okay. That, you know, your tax bill goes to finance is still being applied to that land. And so there is, you know, there's taxes to be paid.
So the hookups are the responsibility of the property owner, and how much water you actually use. We don't want to go through this today, but it seems like there's an awful lot of variables here.
The assessor looks at, you know, how much you've got and how many bathrooms you have in this property. And, I mean, you pay a water bill for however much water you're using, but the amount of burden you place on the utilities figures into your assessment. So, you know, how much you're consuming, even though you're paying for the consumption of it, but your right to consume that much is part of your tax liability.
All right, so the bodie is, as they say in the South Side, you got $2 million in T-bills. You've seen this coming. You got in cash right at the top. You're the best traders on earth. Of course, you go through PTI. Now, you got your $2 million. Are you parting with a nickel today to get in the market here, Rod, or no?
Am I part with money today?
If you got $2 million that you got out 6 months ago and you're just sitting there in a T-bill and Dan's going to go to the auction for you today and you're going to call him up and say, hey, don't go to that auction. I want to do something else with it. Are you there yet or no?
I'm keeping my T-bills. I want to watch. I was mad at myself because I went to just pick up some puts on the market last week and I got busy with real estate and I didn't. And now I'm sorry. I could have made some... good bucks already. No, I'm watching here.
Well, we've got every client, as you well know. Everything we have here is a put attached to it. I'm kicking myself. I could just as easily have two.
Well, your clients are going to be very happy this morning. They don't have to, you know, be wringing their hands. They'll go, wow, I wish I would have done something. So at least your clients can sleep. So that's a good thing.
Well, I would have liked to have had an extra one there. Just saying. Yeah. So what, you know, well, as you know from a trader, I mean, as you know my personality better than most. There's always, no matter how good of a day you had, you always make mistakes, right? I mean, it's, you know,
right.
I mean, it's like a softball game. You went 3-for-4. Why did I swing at that pitch the fourth time up, right? You never think of the good stuff because that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Well, you always make the same 10 mistakes as a trader, and you guys know that. Oh, yeah. There's no new mistakes in trading.
Yeah, isn't that unfortunate, John? You can't make a new mistake.
Yeah.
It's like you can't invent a new fetish. Somebody already did it before.
Right. How boring.
All right, we got like a minute left or a couple minutes left. Aren't you? I'm very impressed with how the French have done these Olympics. I mean, there's all kinds of people there. Doesn't seem to be any problems. What is the deal on getting family members over there? All these people have seem like, you know, 4 and 5 family members. And was there a, you know, a deal for family or something? I think it's great. I mean, it's not just
us. I think
us.
It's like high school graduation. You only get so many tickets that otherwise grandpa and grandpa are SOL. You know, I think it's something like that. Because there's only so many seats.
Oh, speaking of which, you know, I heard on the way home last night, Odd, I was going
to
call you
and
ask. Except a bunch of idiots are driving by me 100 miles an hour in the rain. The new thing now is for weddings. You know how you get your invitation if you're invited? Well, now they're sending out notices in the mail to people that are not invited and as to why, whether it's only going to be family or something else. So if you think you should be invited, like to John's wedding, you're going to get something in the mail and said, sorry, there's only 30 people and you didn't make the cut.
That's such a millennial thing to do.
Yeah, so like a rule to show cause.
Why wasn't I invited? Well, here it is, right in the mail. You weren't invited because you're 70.
You're a horse's ass, but yeah. Please send the present. Is that kind of
yeah,
thing?
You're 70 on a list. The place only holds 60. By the way, please send present.
We've been meaning to tell you for years how little we thought of you. Now is a chance to do it.
Right? You may have thought you were in the top 50 friends. You're not. God. I did get a thing from one of my clients. She actually got divorced and sent out a letter or a postcard or a card saying that she and the hubby are getting divorced with the two separate cards, and they got a picture of them the day they got divorced and the day they got married. The wedding picture's on the card.
Well, I guess it's better than, you know, sinking an axe into somebody's head, you know. So, you know, at least I think that means that's amicable divorce, maybe. They're both going to thrive and prosper and go off into the sunset. I think that's what that means.
Well, we come back a little bit here. We're only down 222. We're only down 1,000. So we're back 180 in the NASDAQ in the last 20 minutes. Is anybody going to try and buy the dip here today, you think, or no?
No. I'm not.
Well, NVIDIA is down.
You all do what you want. I don't trust this. This is not just a 2-day pullback, I don't think. I think it's, even if it settles, this is just setting the stage for the fall.
Well, do you think there's a, I'm not going to use this term, but I will anyway. Do you think there's a hidden reason behind this? Some bank that's out because of the yen move, somebody, NVIDIA losing, you know, or someplace losing a part of their backlog? Is there something here that we're going to find out about 2 hours from now that everybody else seems to know?
I think it's been your people's faces for at least a year and a half. You know, things are not that great. And we've been, what's that little the game that you pull out one stick at a time, and then finally you pull out the one that brings the whole thing down? It's the same thing. It's not been that hot. People are struggling. There's been jobs. The only jobs that are available are if you want to serve fast food. So there's not a lot of great jobs being created. There's jobs being created only if you've got a certain level of education, or you're working 3 or 4 jobs. So what the majority of the middle class has known for quite a while, the people who've been sitting at the top of the food chain with a nice portfolio, think everything's okay. But you have to listen to the undercurrents, and you got to watch the rumblings, because we've had plenty of warning, in my opinion.
Well, there are some places that want some jobs. I talked to my nephew yesterday. What's my nephew's daughter to me, Jen? My second niece.
Great nephew.
Okay.
Grandniece.
All right. So it was her two-year birthday. I talked to my nephew, and he's in the metal business. And he goes, they just were able to buy some firm because the guy went out of business because he just retired. They were able to snag four people from that place. One of them was a foreman, and all of a sudden, they're taking on new jobs. He's the place he used to work for. The guy told them they could hire, they would hire five people today if they could. And some of the stuff that's actually come back from China in those places, you can get a job there real easy for good dough. But there's nobody wants them, and then nobody's trained for them. So there is some stuff available. I mean, we're not talking about hundreds, but there's some stuff available. But anyway, well, I just hope this
available. And God knows we're looking for people in the trade. So
yeah,
I mean, everybody's crying for tradespeople. So I mean, there's things to do, but you know, you when you go to that should be a cautionary tale for everybody who is going to college for basket weaving. You know, it's nice to. Everybody should go to school, but you ought to minor in something. You need to major in something that you can make money in, or you need to think about maybe I'd like to be an electrician.
Did Jan ever tell you? Jan ever show you how he weaves baskets?
Very funny.
Anyway, both of you guys, thank you. Like I say, we're trying to buy it a little bit here, but still, it's down pretty awful. The big movers again are a Japanese yen. What's causing that? Not sure. But it's a 3% move. Never see that. We've seen NVIDIA down in the crap over here, but every one of the seven stocks is leading the world. Apple, oh, have you ever seen Apple? $21. Good Lord.
Yep. Save your money. Watch what happens, and the next cycle around, you could start picking at stuff. But I'd sit on the side and watch what happens for a little bit.
There you go. John, thank you. We'll talk to you later in the week. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Advertising has us chasing cars and clothes, working jobs we hate so we can buy shit we don't need.
That's all, folks.